take the point. Take the point. Take the point. Alright folks, that was Florida Gator fans at the Swamp singing Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down, an all-time classic. My name's Tom Zalesnak, I'm here with Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett on the Take the Points College Football Podcast. Dan, quite a week of college football last week. What were your thoughts?
Well, Oklahoma, right off the bat, Ryan's favorite team. Lets us down again. Every year he just keeps talking us up about Oklahoma. Oklahoma this, Oklahoma that. Look out for Oklahoma. Heisman for Oklahoma. Easy path for Oklahoma. Oklahoma blows it again as a 30-point favorite to Iowa State, who's playing without their amazing impersonator-looking Nick Cage Conner quarterback. So, just an absolute letdown to lose by more than four touchdowns.
Third stringer.
Yeah, even worse. Third stringer. Over four touchdowns. After that, I mean, everything else just seems pretty much insignificant, to be honest with you. But I will let Ryan take it from here.
Yeah, Ryan, tell us about Little Game Lincoln and the Oklahoma Sooners.
Oh, I like it. That is, it's going to stick.
I saw it online somewhere and I forget who to give credit to, but I think it's going to stick.
We're giving no one but you credit. Unfortunately, he won't stick around long enough for that to matter. But I mean, just a crazy game, just an awesome game. I think really the key to this game was just the second half. I mean, to outscore him 25-7. In the second half was just an embarrassment. Hats off Iowa State. Hats off to their third string quarterback. The big game Bob Poops is still lingering around Norman. You know, it's like Hiroshima.
Those bombs.
Nuclear flowers.
The shadow of Bob Stoops remains after his body was blown away.
It's just his inept fourth quarter decision making is like radiation just lingering over Norman.
I don't know if we want to be making nuclear Holocaust jokes at a time when
now?
the rocket might not even make it to air. Yeah.
We can't wait for season six. I'll tell you that much.
I got to rush these podcasts out. No editing.
We're on the West Coast, Tom. We're in the fallout zone out here in Phoenix, close enough to LA that we're in trouble. So,
yeah, I'm in the safe zone here in Connecticut, unless like France gets a nuclear weapon that, well, they have one, but you know, if they want to blow us up, which I don't see happening soon.
No, and it still might not be as bad as that Oklahoma performance. So, anyways. Good to see Oklahoma doing what they always do. Good to see an upset. It's always good because pretty much everybody else took care of business. One other big upset, and I'm sure our Big Ten expert's going to want to talk about that big upset.
Oh, I don't have much to say, unfortunately. Michigan just isn't great at this point of the season. I still think they're young and they could be better later on. I'm actually a little upset as a Penn State fan because they have to play Michigan in 2 weeks. I was hoping Michigan would somehow squeeze that game out, and then they've got Indiana this week. I wanted them to go in undefeated and a little cocky to Happy Valley and then have Penn State beat them. Now I'm worried that Coach Harbaugh is going to pull a Mike Masser and make them run down to the reservoir and do like a million hills, and the Michigan players are going to get it together and start playing better now going forward. So that worries me as a Penn State fan, but this game, there's not much to say. It was in the rain. Michigan State pounded the ball. Michigan, for some reason, threw like over 40 pass attempts in a monsoon, which was not the smartest idea. But Michigan State just played better, executed better, and a little bit better coaching by perhaps no longer on the hot seat, Mark D'Antonio. We have got a lot of hot seat coach talk today, Ryan. This is the first one. You said he might be fired this year. You think he saved his job?
I think so. Yeah, I think he did.
I mean, that's the one that matters.
It is. It's a big one. But also, he's got them playing the right way. So good for him. I really thought that, like I said, we want hot takes week one. I gave you a hot take. It was a shot. I still think they're not great. I don't think they're worthy of being a top 20 team. So, you know, we'll see if the pollsters overreact or not.
I think there's going to be a lot of overreactions in the Big Ten this week. One other game that I can only really talk about in the intro is perhaps the most exciting game of the week. I texted you guys about it. Western Michigan at Buffalo, 7 overtimes, 71-65. I know nobody cares about these teams, but that was captivating. Like, I was watching Alabama, Texas A&M. I flipped over to that one, and I did not flip back until it was over. So those poor Buffalo fans.
Well,
that's the power of college football, Tom.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The NFL sucks so bad now that, like, legitimately a Western Michigan Buffalo game is more entertaining and exciting than, like, Packers Cowboys.
Pretty much. Maction is alive and well. It's good to know. Good
that
to
was
see.
The ultimate Maction game of all time.
I love it.
Yep. Anyway, if either of you guys have any thoughts, now's the time. Otherwise, we move into the lines. Yep, Dan?
Real quick. One more team that I really want to talk about real quick is Auburn, who continues to win and roll and put up really good offensive numbers. The running back at over 200 yards. Jared Stidham, 3 touchdowns, almost perfect. We're about halfway through the college football year, and there's still a lot of teams who can make the playoff. And it's wide open, like really, really, really wide open. I mean, outside of Alabama, Clemson, even if you assume those two, there's a lot of football to be left. So very exciting second half of the year to be had, I'll tell you that much.
Dan, what has changed? I mean, this team that put up 24 against Mercer now all of a sudden looks like maybe the fifth best team in the country.
Malzahn is a really, really smart offensive coach. I mean, he always has been for years and years and years, from high school to Arkansas State and Auburn offensive coordinator, Auburn head coach. And I think for a long time he scored over 21, I think, was it, for a whole bunch of games in a row. So, I mean, obviously he has had some issues offensively for over the past 2 or 3 years, but I mean, it's the first time in a long time, and unfortunately, it also happened in a really hard conference that produces a ton of NFL, players on defensive line and everywhere. So he has made changes to the offense. I think the offense has become way more comfortable. They're Auburn. They have a ton of talent, really great coaching, and this is what you see. They only have one loss on the whole year, and it was, at Clemson in a really low-scoring game, which is looking like pretty much meaningless at this point. So they're pretty much, undefeated. They can win out and obviously win the national title. It's in their hands still. So yet another reason why Auburn and college football are great.
So many teams, as you said, still control their own destiny. Oklahoma Tons. Losing really opens up the Big 12. Now you've got 4 Big 12 teams at least who think they have a legitimate shot. The ACC, Clemson's obviously the front runner there. But Miami pulls out a win, and so they're still in it. NC State. Oh, let me brag about NC State. I predicted in our first episode of the season that they would beat one of the big boys in the ACC. Well, I was wrong. They've already beat 2 with a Clemson trap game coming up in a few weeks.
Hell yeah, Tom, you're absolutely right.
So we'll see. Anyway, let's move to the Week 7 lines. Before we do, actually, I forgot to mention – so we have our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket we do each week. And this week is a special one because we've got Mr. Tim Tebow, the one we've been waiting for all season long. Ryan's going to talk for 45 minutes about Tim Tebow and his greatness and his legacy. We may have some minor league baseball talk. There might be some broadcasting talk. We're going to get deep into Tebow.
Oh boy.
Well, I'm going to keep it to the season, Tom. I'm going to try to contain myself, but there's a lot of good things there.
All right. And they'll be facing off against 1992 Alabama with Jay Barker, Antonio Langham, George Teague. So I've done a lot of research on this team, and don't sleep on 92 Alabama. So that's going to be a good one. But for now, we're going to do the week 7 lines, and Dan is going to run the lines this week. So Dan, where do you want to start?
Yes, a very rare change of pace for Take the Points.
Somebody was off work. Actually, both of us were off work today. You being off work, you had time to do the lines. Me being off work and having a kid, I actually have less time. So
that's what you think, but moving on. In honor of you allowing me to do this, we will start in your conference, Tom, in the Big Ten. We're going to go with Purdue traveling to Wisconsin. Wisconsin laying 15.5, total of 51.5. Michigan minus a touchdown at Indiana. Keep in mind, Michigan travels to Penn State next week. Ohio State minus 24 at Nebraska. And Michigan State minus 4 at Minnesota with an NFL very low like total of 39.5. I'll shoot it to you, Tom. What sticks out to you out of those four lines, and what do you like and why?
Okay, I'll tell you about all of them because this is my conference. So we'll start with Ohio State at Nebraska. Ohio State's been absolutely murdering people. They've actually had to contact Melania Trump's anti-bullying campaign to look into JT Barrett. But they've been, like Ohio State always does, they're picking on the shitty teams. So they crush Rutgers, they crush Maryland. Nebraska is obviously better than those teams, but still not great. So this is a complete stay away. We have no idea what Ohio State team is going to show up. Nebraska, too, I don't know what to think of them. I guess I would, if I had to pick this one, I would lean Nebraska. They got a lot of points and they have home field, but I definitely won't be betting it, and I'd be scared as a Nebraska fan that Ohio State has finally come together. Michigan at Indiana, not enough points for Indiana. Indiana's a first half team, and they're also a passing team, which, as we saw, Michigan State beat Michigan with the run game. That's how you beat them. The pass game, I don't believe, and at least not with the players of Indiana, is the way to beat Michigan. So I think Michigan, in addition to wanting a little bit of revenge, I think just in a normal week, they're at least 7 points better than Indiana and probably at least 14 points better than Indiana. I know they have the look ahead, so I would expect a slow start, and then I expect them to cover this win by 14 points, 17 points in the second half. So maybe look at Indiana first half, but Michigan for the game for sure. And then Purdue at Wisconsin, same thing. Purdue will start. They'll start well, I believe, but Wisconsin's got too much firepower for them, so I'd lay that with Wisconsin. And then Michigan State at Minnesota. Michigan State, very low-scoring team. God, Minnesota's bad this year. I mean, the PJ Fleck experiment's going to be a multi-year process. So I think I would probably hook this one. How do we feel betting at a 39-point under? Because I think that's the right move, but it's not something we generally advise.
I can't
torture.
Do it in football. I can't do it in college because the clock stops so much, the first downs. And, like, special team snafu, a 26-yard field goal, it goes wide. Or it might get blocked, return for a touchdown. I just can't do it as much as it probably is right. Cannot bet an under on 39.5 or 40, whatever you see it in some shops. But, horrible.
All right, so this game is going to be a stay away then because Michigan State's going to win this game by 6 points. And it's going to be, like, 24-12. No, that's not. Wait, that math doesn't add up. 18-12. Okay. Anyway, this is going to be a horrible game to watch. And as you said, if you bet this game, it's going to be torture. So stay away from that one.
Yeah. Overall, it's a pretty weak week.
Yeah. Michigan, Wisconsin.
In the Big Ten. So that's why we are getting it out of the way. All right. Anyone else have anything? Yeah. Let's move on. Let's move on to a conference with a little bit more scoring. Let's move on to the Big 12. Okay, game one. TCU, a very nice surprise, up to number six in the rankings as of this morning. -4.5 at Kansas State. Texas Tech is at West Virginia, -3.5. Total of 76.5. Oklahoma is looking for a rebound, -7.5. At UT, our Texas Longhorns. And last but not least, the ghost of Art Briles is getting 25.5 at Oklahoma State. There's a lot of interesting things going on in the Big 12. TCU obviously is right now the most likely team to make it out of the Big 12, but there's a ton of football to be played. There's a conference championship now this year. It's still wide open. I don't know if Oklahoma or Oklahoma State can necessarily just win out and make the playoff anymore. I'm not sure. It's really close. I was trying to think about this before the podcast started. If Oklahoma State has one loss and they beat Oklahoma twice, are they in? But now Oklahoma will finish with three losses and be ranked, 18th or some bullshit like that? So I don't know. So the Big 12 may not find itself in a playoff again. But as far as these lines go this week, I think I would like Kansas State more if I knew about their quarterback situation. Recording this podcast on Monday, Jesse Ertz is questionable. Hard to say if he's going to play. That's a big factor. I like West Virginia -3.5 against Texas Tech. I don't think Texas Tech travels so well, especially all the way to West Virginia. We don't like Oklahoma. Therefore, I will always take the UT Horns plus the points against Oklahoma. This is a neutral site game, obviously, every year. And Oklahoma State should absolutely destroy Baylor, but I've said this before about this team. We are on hiatus betting Oklahoma State, I think, until they really hammer somebody like 63-10. So that's how I feel about the Big 12. How about you, Ryan?
Well, Dan, I think that 63-10 is coming this week. So get ready to start betting Oklahoma State again. I really like that one. Home game, super important. I think this is the game that they really kind of get their swagger back, and they're going to enjoy kind of running it up on Baylor, because Baylor did enjoy kind of running it up on them and beating them, upsetting them a few times when Oklahoma State was higher ranked and Baylor beat them. So Texas, Oklahoma, I'm with you on that. West Virginia, I agree with you on that. I don't think Texas Tech can handle going to Morgantown. Not many teams can handle going to Morgantown. And TCU, I actually love a lot in this game and in general this season. This is just an awesome, awesome year for TCU so far as what they've been doing on both sides of the ball. They're really super creative, and defensively, they're finally getting back to what Gary Patterson's best known for. And when I was watching that game, there was some really good tidbits kind of picking up here and there from the announcers, where they were saying that when TCU was in the Mountain West and dominating every year, it was because he was getting the best recruits of that tier, and he was able to redshirt. He basically said he redshirted over 80% of his freshmen every season when he was there. But when they moved to the Big 12, he didn't have that luxury anymore. Those first few years in the Big 12, he has to recruit 4- and 5-star kids, and those kids don't want a redshirt. They want to play right away. He needs them to play right away. And he said he's finally now at the point where most of his freshman classes are getting redshirted again. And this is his first real defense in the Big 12 with his types of players who have sat a year and learned the system mentally before he puts them into it. And that's why they're executing so flawlessly against all these spread, fast, hurry-up offenses where it's almost impossible as a defense to keep up, and they're somehow doing it, and that's kind of why. And I think that's a big reason factor for me why I really like them going forward to potentially be a playoff team.
Very true. Z, kick it to you. Big 12 picks. Let's do this.
Okay. I don't have a ton of thoughts on this conference. Overall, I would like to reiterate what you said. I think this conference is wide open and there are several teams who can win, but as in terms of conferences, looking at the playoff, I think they're in last place right now. Obviously a ton can change, but the way things are going, they certainly look like the odd man out. And I would say this looks like a year where you could potentially get two teams from the same conference. I think Georgia's looking great. And if Georgia goes in undefeated against undefeated Alabama in an SEC championship game, and that ends up being, you know, a 3-6-point game, I'm not sure you can leave one of those teams out. So, especially against an Oklahoma team that lost to Iowa State. And then the Pac-12, we'll see what happens there. Do we think Washington's going to, well, we'll get to Washington, but I'm not so certain they're going to win out. So I guess we'll see. This week, line is too high for Oklahoma State for me, even though they should win easily. Take the points in the Red River rivalry, obviously. I think Iowa State gets a big letdown game, so I would never bet on Kansas, but I would definitely stay away from Ohio State in that one. And then give me Holgorsen at home, lay the points, especially when it's only 3 points against Texas Tech with their zero defense. They might be the worst defense. I know we say Oregon State and Rutgers are the worst teams, but Texas Tech, just as a defensive unit, might be the worst. So I think West Virginia is my favorite bet of those.
Okay, I like that. All right.
Back to you.
Sounds good. Moving on. ACC conference number 3. All right, here we go. Right off the bat, Clemson travels to the Carrier Dome, play the Syracuse Orange, getting 22.5 points and a total of 55.
That's a Friday night game, folks. Friday the 13th.
Oh, boy.
Just saying.
Oh, boy. NC State, minus 12, travels to Pittsburgh. Florida State's laying a touchdown at Tom Z's favorite Duke Blue Devils. Boston College travels to Louisville, laying 22. And Georgia Tech heads to Miami. Miami laying a touchdown, total 52.5. Any of you, or sorry, either of you, like to start this one off?
I'll start this one because I can be pretty quick. First off, I'm off Duke. My new team is NC State in the ACC. Okay. And I hate to do this, but I think that's a big trap. That's my trap of the week at Pitt. 12 points is too much. They're coming off an emotional win. They've got Clemson in a few weeks. They've got other big games. I think people are looking past Pitt this year. Pitt's not great, but at home, I think they can cover the 12. Backdoor cover in that game. You're a fool if you bet on Syracuse. I don't like anyone in that Florida State game. Louisville minus 21.5. Louisville's been playing like a super mediocre team for the last, going back to last season. We're talking about, what, 10, 11 games now? They've been fairly mediocre. So
yeah,
I don't think I can pick BC either, but I think you have to take the points if you're picking a side in that game. And then another one, I don't think you mentioned this, but Virginia at UNC. UNC has been atrocious this year, and Virginia has been surprisingly decent. So I think I'm taking the Cavs in that game.
Ooh.
Low All level right. of confidence, obviously.
All right. Sounds good. Ryan?
Quick question. What's up with the Georgia Tech Miami? Is that game going to happen or not?
There was no line this morning, and now there's only one sports book in Vegas that has that line of minus 752.5. Not sure.
Okay.
Apparently, it's being moved up to Thursday, the 13th, like 4 days, 3 days from now.
Oh, wow. If that does happen, listeners, that is an unbelievable spot right there. If you can get... Oh, no, for Georgia Tech.
I'm with Ryan on this one.
Oh, if you can get an emotional Miami team coming off the beating, they beat Florida State. They beat their arch rival. And now they have 2.5 days to prepare for the triple option. Oh, come on, bro. That's easy plus points. Easy to take a touchdown. Right now, if they're laying 6.5, 7, if you can get a touchdown on a team that has 2.5 days to prepare for a triple option, Give me Georgia Tech. Their quarterback is absolutely locked in. Taquan Marshall is a backdoor Heisman Trophy contender right now.
I'm with Ryan on that one 100%, Dan.
Okay, yeah, it makes total sense. I was just thinking of Georgia Tech traveling on a short week, but the travel's so quick.
But they're coming off a bye, too, by the way, keep in mind.
That's a good point. There isn't much to like about the ACC this week in terms of wagering. I do like, as much as you say you're off Duke, the only thing I really like this week is Duke plus the 7. Why the hell is Florida State favored by a touchdown on the road versus anybody? Look, everyone knows that Florida State is not an elite team. There is blood in the water in the ACC. And if Duke ever has a chance to beat Florida State at home, it's this Saturday, and everybody knows it. So this is a once, maybe in a lifetime opportunity for Duke. There you go. So, yeah, I'll take the 7. I would hate laying a touchdown with Florida State in the spot. So that's pretty much that to wrap up the ACC.
Wait, are we gonna share our theory about Florida State with the listeners? I think this is a good time to make a bold prediction.
Oh yeah, sure. Yes, that. Well, actually, I have two predictions with them, but I think all of us are in agreement. That one, they're gonna have to win a couple games in order to make a bowl this year. And they might be one of those teams that actually finishes under 500 with the 5-7 record who gets a bowl appearance. And as crazy as it sounds, it might come down to Florida State, Florida, later in the year. Each team needs a win actually to get in a bowl. Like, how the hell did we get to that? So that's pretty crazy. Yeah, that's our prediction, that Florida State will be the 5-7 team this year that gets in a bowl, plays December, whatever, 19th.
I have a little more faith in the Florida Gators than you. I think they get a nice 7-5 record and get in comfortably. My additional prediction is that Florida State goes to the all-new Bad Boy Tractor Bowl.
Yes.
Which is formerly the same. Yeah. Sponsored by Puff Daddy. That's the one that was the St. Petersburg Bowl that was famous for its horrible patches of turf that UConn played in, and in the worst probably bowl game of the last 3 years, a 16-10 thriller in St. Petersburg. So I think Justin Blackman in Florida will be making the short trip to St. Petersburg later in the year.
Justin Blackman. Every time you say that, I only think of the former Oklahoma State wide receiver. That's the only thing I think of.
Oh yeah. Okay. Is that not his name? Did I just confuse him with another guy?
Nope. I think you're right. It's just a slight different one-letter spelling, but pronounced the same. All right, moving on. We have two major conferences left, but before we get there, I have two games that are of non-Power 5 conference I want to get to. But before we even get to that, since we mentioned Clemson, I have a hypothetical question for you boys. What odds would you wager that Alabama and Clemson meet in the national title game? If you would make a yes and a no, say minus and plus, what would you do? Obviously, no is more likely in theory, but not that
but
much.
But are we going by what we actually think the odds are of that happening, like mathematical, statistical probability, or are we just going by what we think people will bet on? We're going by Vegas's method.
If you were in Las Vegas right now and you walked into a sports book and you looked up under college football and it said, will Alabama play Clemson in the national title game? Yes, blank, no, blank. What do you think those two numbers are?
I think it's even, like 1-1. Although, you know, that seems kind of tough to get people to bet. So I'm saying maybe 2-1.
Okay, I got some thoughts. So I'm going to give you both numbers. I'm going to give you what I think Vegas thinks. I'm going to give you what is actually the numbers. So I think Vegas would probably have this at, yes, plus 210, no, minus like 185. But in reality, this should be, yes, should be minus 110. And the no should be like plus 150.
Well, Those are both excellent guesses. However, this is a real wager that is available for betting.
Ooh.
No is minus 475. Yes, plus 350.
Ooh, I will be wagering on that. Oh, that's good value.
3.5 to 1?
That's very good value. These are clearly the best two teams. I mean, the best odds of one of them not making it, I think, is actually for Georgia to beat out Alabama.
I thought that was interesting.
That's good value. That's
I mean, if Baker Mayfield plays Alabama or Clemson, we're getting another 31-0 shutout Fiesta Bowl, yeah, aren't we?
I'm smacked. Destroyed.
Or Washington.
Whoever the number four team is, who isn't either Penn State or Ohio State, basically, is going to get absolutely waxed by either Alabama or Clemson. They're not scoring. I don't give a fuck who it is. So, whatever. So, anyway, that was a fun little prop segment.
We got to lay on. We're putting down some money before I release this episode. I don't want even like three people to hear this and tilt that line a little bit.
Okay, moving on to the SEC. We're going to save the Pac-12 after dark for last. It's just been out of control, and it's going to be epic this weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. But I always look forward to the SEC, so without further ado. All right, Vanderbilt travels to Mississippi, who's laying 3. Arkansas travels to Alabama, laying a cool 30 points with a total of 56. Missouri travels to Georgia, laying 31. Texas A&M is going to attempt to rally. They travel to Florida, who's laying 3 with a total of 52. Auburn's laying a full touchdown at LSU with a total of 44.5. South Carolina travels to Tennessee, who is a 2.5-point favorite. And BYU, who's absolutely terrible this year, travels to Mississippi State, who's laying 23 points with a total of 48.5. Anything stick out to you guys before I talk about the SEC?
Dan, you should kick this off. You're Mr. SEC.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I will say that there is a lot of interesting things going on in the SEC this week. I love the SEC slate. First off, Tennessee's favored by 2.5 points against South Carolina for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Butch Jones should never be favored in any game going forward. No. Even against Kentucky, it doesn't matter. I like South Carolina money line, I know for sure. Auburn -6.5 at LSU, very interesting. LSU coming off that win at Florida, which is one of the shadier line movements I've ever seen in my entire life, ever. Open as a full touchdown, close as a pick. Insane last week. And, of course, ends in a one-point game. So Vegas just all over that.
It's Tom Petty, man.
Yeah, it was. It actually happened. And, of course, LSU coming off the loss to Troy. So a lot of stuff. That being said, I don't think I can touch that game whatsoever or that total of 44.5. But all I really, really want to talk about is Arkansas traveling to Alabama. Now, earlier in the year, you may have thought that Nick Saban was going over to College Station to take the soul of Kevin Sumlin, but that's not true. He won 4 games in a row. They played a valiant game against Alabama. Well, that's not good news for Arkansas. Alabama played a close game last week. They don't like playing 2 close games in a row. Arkansas has lost 28-7 to TCU. They went to overtime in one cool, exciting, fun game. They just got worked against South Carolina and gave up 48 points to a team with no quarterback or offense. They've been giving up about 28, 35, 44, 50 points all over the place all year. Their defense is not good for the SEC. Their offense is horrible. Their starting quarterback's injured and or questionable. Their backup quarterback's a true freshman on the road. They're not going to score. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your once-a-year Alabama 55-0 shutout. By the way, conveniently, what's the total on this game? You know what it is already. 55.5. They know. This is the... It's either 55 or 56, and they made it 55.5, which is the funniest shit ever. Like, it's like we came up with the total. We're like, what's the score going to be? 55, nothing. What's the total? 55.5. They're like, all right. Well, 55.5 we'll keep, but we can't do that, so we'll say 30. They're like, all right. Alabama's my lock of the week at lane 30. I love them. Also, quickly forgot to mention my trap of the week was Duke +7, and we'll get to the total later. But that's my pick for the SEC. Tom, what do you like?
Dan, once a year, you explain your Shang Tsung theory. Perhaps for the new listeners, you'd want to go through it?
Sure, real quick. Nick Saban's going to take their soul. It's going to be a blowout. The coach will never recover. Not only will the team not recover this year, but the coach never recovers. The coach sometimes has to walk away from coaching. It happened to Gene Chizik lately. I've been following him on Twitter. His life is not like Nick Saban's. Nick Saban prepares for college football games during the week, and Gene Chizik takes weird Instagram pics, which is a lot different than what he was doing a couple of years ago playing in the Iron Bowl. Ryan, go right ahead.
Isn't Gene Chizik working at a chicken shop now? No, this is for real. This isn't a bullshit question.
Chizik's no, chicken?
Two things. He works for CBS College Football, and he also does some chicken work. There is a photo of him working in the back of the house at a chicken shop that I think he owns in, like, rural South. So Gene Chiggins really is Gene Chiggins. I mean, if we're going to look into this, might make a road trip.
It's run out of an empty warehouse. It's called Chiz Filet. There might be a copyright issue.
That's really funny. His career ended in two moments. One, when he lost to Nick Saban like 55-0. And two, when Cam Newton went on the Gruden QB camp and they said, can you call any play from your college days? And he's like, what do you mean? And they're like, just like, you know, any offensive play. He's like, yeah, I know we didn't have any. And Gene Chiggins is sitting at home going, shut up. That was me. I coached you up. Cam's like, no, you didn't. And they're like, all right, so you're fired.
All right, so I pulled this up while we were talking, and I don't know if it's going to work, but we're going to give this a shot. Let's see. Oh. No? All right, that didn't work. Hang on. Finish him. There it is.
Thank you. He is going to finish him.
All right, you're done, Bielema.
This is his last trip to Tuscaloosa. Hope he really absorbs it, takes it in. It's going to be ugly. This is going to be one of those epic, epic beatdowns where Alabama's backup quarterback comes in and, like, throws two touchdowns. It'll be bad. Very bad. I can't wait.
Bad. All right. So I'm with you. The only other team I like to participate in a blowout would be Georgia blowing out Missouri. 31 points is a lot, though. You could easily see, like, a 41-13 type thing. So that's a little tough. But those two teams are the cream of the crop in the SEC. Nobody else is even close. I guess Auburn might be close. We'll keep an eye on them. But that Auburn game's too tricky, like you said. So that's it. I have no thoughts. Send it to Ryan.
All right. Start off, Dan, completely agree. Alabama's a complete lock. Total, utter lock this week. Unlike you guys, I think Georgia is also an absolute lock. I think they're going to look at Alabama and they're going to try to do the same thing. And I can see those games easily being like 110-0 combined.
Possible.
That should be an over-under bet.
I would love it.
Call Vegas
shit out of it.
100 points even over-under Alabama and Georgia combined. Oh, it's perfect. Oh.
I'd love it. And it's how it's going to end up. So that's my thought on that. LSU Auburn. I know you guys both think that's a bit tricky. I actually am kind of leaning a little bit heavier onto Auburn. I think Auburn's going to win this game. I think Auburn getting less than a touchdown is just feels like it's right. LSU right now is really kind of, you know, they got their big win, and I don't think they're going to be able to put up much of a fight against Auburn. And then the last one I want to talk about that Dan kind of started with, How in the hell is Butch Jones favored in any football game against any team with competent players?
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible? South Carolina's not terrible. They're 4-2. They just blew out Arkansas. They lost a close one-score game to A&M. They blew out Missouri. They beat NC State. What the hell's wrong with them? Why can't they go down to Neyland and beat that terrible piece of shit team that wants nothing to do with effort for Butch Jones? It makes no sense at all. None.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but that NC State win doesn't count because Deebo Samuel is now injured, who was sort of the star of that game. So I would not count that one.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. They still went out to Arkansas and beat the balls off of them. What mean they can't travel? They just showed they could travel. This just makes no sense. So for me, I'm all over South Carolina, all over Alabama, all over Georgia, and I do like Auburn as well this week.
Okay.
All right. So you're rolling with the best three teams and against Butch Jones.
Correct.
That's pretty good logic.
Yep.
That was excellent. I forgot to mention the two non-Power 5 games real quick. Boise
State. I've got a couple of those as well.
Okay. Real quick. Before we get to the Pac-12 After Dark, which we should just always do really like very end of the podcast to keep it in line with how the Pac-12 really is. It's like, if you want to hear the Pac-12 games, just fast forward to the 38-minute mark. And you might have a chance.
Not if Peterson gets his way. You know what would be funny if he's complaining to ESPN? ESPN should all of a sudden put Washington on at 11:30 Eastern, like an 8:30 a.m. Pacific game. With obviously, we know who announces that one.
What they should do is be like, oh, okay, you are interested in having your games on at primetime? Fine. We're going to show them the very next day during NFL football. We'll let's put them on ESPN2. You can, that'll be your next coverage. Have fun with that on Sunday. He's in no position to say that. It's a West Coast thing. Ask the Golden State Warriors about it. Anyway, moving on. Boise State travels to San Diego State, who's laying a touchdown, total 44.5. And I got UConn travels to Temple. Temple laying 12.5, total of 62. UConn fresh off giving up a cool, what was that, 71?
70, even.
70, I'm sorry. 70.
Yeah, don't make them look bad.
Yeah, that's my fault. I want to be accurate here on take the points. 70 points.
70 to 31.
Boise State's not that good. San Diego State's really well coached, always good running. I'll take San Diego State -7, and I'm not touching UConn Temple ever.
Temple's not that great this year, but I think you should never pick UConn the rest of the season, perhaps ever again, after that absolutely pathetic display. We talk about it every week, I living 5 miles from the UConn Stadium, and Dan, you being an alum, and Ryan, you just, you know, having a human brain and eyes and being able to see them. Like, yes. We are just absolutely appalled by UConn every week. But I think, and I know I say this every single week, I think this last week, a 70 to 31 loss to Memphis, not even some powerhouse, but like a decent non-Power 5 team, this might be a new low in program history.
They're horrible.
And that includes the Bob Diaco era.
Mm.
So I don't know. I don't know much about Temple this year. I haven't followed them closely since Matt Rhule left. But if you have to pick, then you have to pick against UConn. There's no other option.
No. Well said.
Two others I want to mention quickly, Dan, are a couple of Florida teams. So Florida State down, Florida down, Miami's good. Perhaps two of the best teams in Florida this year are Central Florida and South Florida. Both are big favorites this week. UCF hosts East Carolina, who's just atrocious this year. It's a 34-point line, which is scary, but UCF has been putting up huge numbers. So I like them. And then South Florida hosts Cincinnati, who is not the Cincinnati that we remember from the last several years. and that's 24.5. South Florida has been crushing people. So I think I might lay a small dollar amount with the two Florida teams.
Interesting.
Okay. Florida's new powerhouse teams.
New 2017.
I swear to God, South Florida might be the best team in Florida.
Very interesting.
Give Lane another year and then we'll reassess. But for now, yes. South Florida, obviously. Number one team in the state of Florida.
So true. All right, are we ready for the Pac-12?
We're ready.
We're always ready for the Pac-12. We love the Pac-12 around here. Okay. Oregon travels to Stanford. Stanford laying a cool 10.5, total of 61. Washington, who's not on TV, travels to Arizona State. Washington laying 17.5, total of 62. Utah travels to USC, who's laying 12.5 with a total of 54.5. USC playing Notre Dame next week. Colorado, -12.5, travels to Oregon State, whose head coach is no longer with the program. Ryan will have some thoughts on that. Washington State, -13.5, travels to Cal. And last but certainly not least, UCLA travels to Tucson to face Arizona. Arizona laying 1 point with a total of 79 points. I love the Pac-12, so I'm just going to start it. I'm not even going to offer to have either of you start it. I'm sorry, guys. This is my favorite thing. Pac-12 football. Okay. Like I said, USC has a huge look ahead spot this week. Again, they got Notre Dame next week. Utah is very frisky. They have a good defense. They got some injury issues at quarterback. Still too early in the week for me to pick that game. Oregon State.
Is Hundley potentially coming back?
Yeah.
Or what's his name? Yeah.
Yeah, the original guy, like 2 weeks ago. So there's, again, to be determined. Washington State laying 14 points against Cal. This could be a very sneaky trap spot. Washington State played all those home games, then had the one big primetime game at Oregon, which they just won. Now another road game against an inferior opponent. I would stay away from that. But the one I really want to talk about is UCLA against Arizona. UCLA is coming off a week off, a bye week. Arizona coming off a big win against Colorado, where their new option-style quarterback had a pretty absurd stat line. 14 carries for 359 yards. Pretty good. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my life.
Dan, you have not seen anything like that in your life, because that is an FBS record.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. Also, he was 11 of 12 passing, just for fun. And that was on the road against Colorado in altitude. And, even if Colorado's bad, it's not super easy to do. This week he gets UCLA in their horseshit defense at home. Rosen, however, gets to play Rich Rod's 3-3-5. You boys know where I'm going with this. Ryan, as you know, the weather outside is absolutely pitcher perfect, beautiful. It's the nicest place in the country right now. We got ourselves the beautiful 6 o'clock local kick, which could not be more beautiful of a time to kick for a football game. My favorite total of the week, over 79. This is going to be the highest scoring game of the whole college football season, I think. I mean, that's pretty much going out on a limb, picking this game over, obviously besides the overtime game with Buffalo. But I really like over 79. I think both teams get in the 40s, 50s, 60s. This will be a fun, fun game. And I like how it starts at 6 our time, 9 for Tom. So, Tom, if you could just make a pot of coffee for this one, you can make it to 1 in the morning to catch the end. It's not going to be over at 2:45. It'll be over at, 12:53. You can make it. Let's do this.
That's still way too late for me. I've been struggling to do the ABC Big Ten, now used to be 8 o'clock, now 7:30 games. That works pretty well for me. I'm right in that old man demo that they're trying to reach by moving it up to 7:30. So
meanwhile,
I'll be watching Ohio State at Nebraska. You guys can fill me in on the Pac-12 after dark.
That's too early for us.
Somebody here has to pay attention to the Big Ten, Dan.
Well, yeah, thank you. And, meanwhile, it's Washington at Arizona State with a 10:45 Eastern kick. Don't even worry. That game never even happens in your world whatsoever.
I'll catch the end when I wake up.
It's so good. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game. I'm trying to convince Ryan to get in the car and make a little trip.
So you guys have the Huskies, the sixth ranked Huskies coming to town, and then you have the highest scoring game of the week potentially. What's that, 2-3 hours away? So,
hour 45 minutes.
Oh, I feel like you guys, this is a prime week for you guys to either, you know, go to the hometown team or make a short road trip.
We'll see.
But it's easy for me to say. Going to bed at like 10 o'clock. So
all the other games are pretty much lame this week. I mean, if we're in the car, it's not like we're going to miss much this week, but I don't know. We will see. But yeah, looking forward to a high scoring shootout. I think Rosen can throw for, you know, 400 yards, and I don't think UCLA's defense is stopping Arizona right now. So looking for a fun one. Pac-12 has been wild all year. Been a lot of fun.
It's so good. Last week wasn't supposed to be the greatest week ever, and it turned out to be maybe the most exciting week of the football season so far. So I'm looking forward to this one. A lot of potentially great matchups. So anything else to add, or shall we take a break? All right. So we'll take a short break, and we'll move into the greatest teams of our lifetime when we come back. 92 Alabama versus 08 Florida. The Tim Tebow Hour coming up.
Sorry. You know, we're hoping for an undefeated season. That was my goal. 7-4 is never done here. But I promise you one thing. A lot of good will come out of this. You have never seen any player in the entire country play as hard as I will play the rest of the season. And you never see someone push the rest of the team as hard as I will push everybody the rest of the season. And you never see a team play harder than we will the rest of the season.
All right. There it is. A little Tim Tebow, Mike Shinoda remix to kick us off. We're back with the greatest teams of our lifetime. It's 2008 Florida, our number 6 seed, versus 92 Alabama, our 11 seed. We're matching up hypothetical teams, the best of the last 25 years. We're putting them in a bracket. This is our second to last week of the first round, and this is the one we've been waiting for. I'm going to hand it over to Ryan Spillett, the number one Tim Tebow fan, and he's going to talk about the 2008 Florida Gators. Then I'll talk about the 92 Alabama Crimson Tide, and then Dan's going to break down this game, and we will decide who would win this fake matchup. So, Ryan, I can't make you wait any longer. You're like a caged beast ready to escape. Tell us about Tim Tebow.
All right. Thank you, Tom, and thanks for playing that amazing intro. It's not the first time today I've heard it. It's not the second. It wasn't the third. That was the fourth time I've heard that today. So thank you so much. The people of Gainesville love that speech so much. They've put it on a plaque and put it at the stadium. So anyways, 2008 Florida Gators, awesome, awesome team that was coming off a super disappointing year before. So just a quick recap. 2 years before that, Tebow was a freshman. They win the national championship with Chris Leak as the main quarterback. He's the phenom freshman who comes off the bench and plows everyone over. The following year, it becomes his team. It's supposed to be the year, the back-to-back. They have a very disappointing season, and despite that, he still wins the Heisman, becomes the first sophomore to ever win a Heisman. Okay, fast forward to the following year. He's a junior, officially upperclassman, officially a team captain. And now it is Urban Meyer's fourth season as the head coach of Florida. So now he's got an official full recruiting cycle through, and also has the consistency of having Dan Mullen by his side for the fourth consecutive season as his offensive coordinator. That's super important, as is defensive coordinator Charlie Strong. And then also want to throw out another assistant coach on that team was Steve Adazio, who would go on to become the head coach at Boston College, who, even though they never really became a ranked successful team, they still have one of the best defenses in the country year in, year out. Okay. So now that we've covered the coaching staffs, let's talk about this these rosters here. So let's start with the defense first. Right off the bat, this defensive backfield was just insane. Two corners, Joe Hayden, Janoris Jenkins, both still 9 years later shut down corners in the NFL. Hayden, maybe you can argue that. Janoris Jenkins, that dude is still legit. At safety, they rotated three guys. Major Wright led the country in Major Wright, Ahmad Black, who led the country in interceptions, and then Will Hill, the big hitter, also coming in and filling in on that. On the defensive line, Brandon Spikes was the middle linebacker. That dude had like 1.4 trillion tackles in his Florida career. Carlos Dunlap on one edge, Jermaine Cunningham coming off the other edge. All those guys are still NFL, dominant NFL players. Dunlap is for sure. Oh, wait, offensively. At receiver, super deep. Lewis Murphy, Percy Harvin, David Nelson, Riley Cooper, all there. Different size, speeds, you know, real variety there. It made it really, really difficult to match up against them because they had so many different types of players. On the offensive line, you had headlined by the Pouncey twins at center and guard. Marquise Pouncey potentially being maybe the best center to come out of college football in the last 20 years. That guy was so good, so smart. Dan will be able to talk about him if need be as the Steelers center. Dan can attest to the day that he was drafted. I almost threw a table, flipped the table over. I knew that was the best pick ever. The late Aaron Hernandez, also a dominant player on that team. And then running backs, Jeff Demps and Chris Rainey, both just world-class U.S. track athletes, legitimately both U.S. track athletes in the backfield. Just shows you the Urban Meyer style of what he was bringing to Florida. And then obviously headlined by Tim Tebow with backup quarterback Cameron Newton. Let's just throw that out.
That's right.
There. Okay. Yeah. Tebow passing on the year. He threw for 2,746 yards and 30 touchdowns. Also ran for 673 yards and 12 more touchdowns in 14 games. So let's real quick just run through these rushing stats. Tebow, 673, 12 touchdowns. Percy Harvin had 660 yards and 10 touchdowns. Rainey had 652 and 4. Demps had 605 and 7. And then even the third-string running back, Moody, had 417 and a score.
Just goes.
Just super, super balanced. Four different guys with over 600 yards rushing. And then the same thing happened with the receivers. Harvin had another 644 and 7. Murphy had 655 and 7. Hernandez had 381 and 5. And Nelson had 228 and 5. So just super, super balanced team. 43.6 points a game. And only 12.9 points against. In 14 games, that team had 34 sacks and 26 interceptions in 14 games. Just amazing. So just an unbelievable team, great roster, super talented. Super, super talented. Anyone have anything to say about that before we talk about the season real quick? We're going to do a quick recap through a couple of games.
No, I think you've covered the just absolute depth of talent.
And unbelievable.
It's just incredible.
Team's so good.
Keep it rolling.
Okay, so let's just talk about a couple of the bigger games, a couple of the ones that kind of stand out to me. The games that stand out, okay, in no particular order. The Gator Stomp game. I want to start with this one. People might not remember the Gator Stomp game and what I'm referring to. So that season, Florida was going on the road, or no, sorry, the neutral site game against Georgia, the big rival game, the rivalry of all rivalries in the SEC East. Number 8, Georgia versus number 5, Florida. Georgia goes down, opens the game. First drive, no Sean Moreno, punches in a touchdown, and the entire Georgia bench runs out onto the field and starts dancing and celebrating. The whole entire roster, 110 guys, started dancing on the field. Obviously, there's a flag. Obviously, you don't poke the bear. That game went from 7-0 Georgia to 49-10 final. They did not see the end zone the rest of the day. Mark Richt, that was your Shang Tsung moment. That was the beginning of the end of Mark Richt and any chance he had of being a successful coach. Also, they played Spurrier, the old ball coach, getting to go against his former squad. First time ever that a former Heisman-winning coach was going and coaching against a team with a Heisman winner. Pretty interesting. They both won for the Heisman for the same team at the same position.
Can I add something there? Was watching YouTube clips of the teams we're talking about. And as I was watching 2008 Florida, we talked about this. Florida fans love making remixes of cock rock songs from the early and late 2000s and showing Tebow highlights. But also, I was watching one of those clips that recapped the whole season in 20 minutes. And they would show each of the coaches. And when it got to Spurrier, this cracked me up. They go, you know, week, whatever it was, they faced off against Steve Spurrier. And then it goes, the glory days. And it showed Spurrier, playing. And then it showed Spurrier coaching for Florida and everybody cheering. And it said, like, and now. And then it showed a sad picture of him moping around on South Carolina.
So. Well, there he had reason to mope, Tom, because that final was 56-6. That was against a ranked South Carolina team, by the way, ranked 24th in the country at that time. Okay, moving along, 56-6 against South Carolina. They have the big rivalry game on the road at Doak Campbell Stadium against Florida State. Bobby Bowden, Christian Ponder, soon to be a first-round NFL pick. 45-15 in terrible weather. That became known as the Bloody Jersey game. That was the game that Tebow was covered in the maroon paint of the Florida State field, but it looked like he was covered in blood and mud, and it was just an awesome picture. Just a perfect kind of photo of this season at large. So
it looked like he broke his nose. It looked like the Andrew WK album.
He's the toughest guy ever. So that was the regular season. They moved all the way up the rankings. Eventually they get all the way to number 2 after that Florida State win. And then they get the chance. Number 2 versus number 1. Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, SEC title game. 31-20, Florida final. Florida beats them convincingly in the Georgia Dome. Tebow MVP moving on. They now become the number 1 team. They play number 2, Oklahoma, led by our favorite coach of all time. Going against the current reigning Heisman Trophy winner and he's soon to be number 1 overall draft pick, Sam Bradford. And despite the 24-14 final score, it was not that close. Florida dominated both sides of the ball. That game never really felt in doubt despite two picks by both quarterbacks. Tebow did get the MVP in that game and would go on to win his second national championship in 3 years. Gentlemen, there it is, the 2008 Florida Gators.
DeMarco Murray on that team, too, that they beat.
Correct. Correct.
All right. Let me move on then to the 1992 Alabama Crimson Tide. And after we talk about them, then we will break down the actual, well, the hypothetical non-actual game. So the first thing you have to know about 92 Alabama is that they are the oldest team in this bracket, and 92 was the cutoff that we made. So they are 25 years old at this point. And the reason we picked this team as the last team eligible for our bracket is because this is the last, I would say, old school college football team before Charlie Ward and a new group of people in 93. It was already happening, you know, with Gino Toretta, et cetera, but this more high-powered offense was taking hold. And Alabama was the last, like, slow, pro-style team like that. So I won't bother with stats because the stats don't really mean anything. Like, for example, we'll get to this, but Jay Barker in the national championship game, which they won 34-13, passed for 18 yards in that whole game. So you can't judge this team by the stats. I know it's hilarious to think back on it. It's like talking about like the era before refrigeration or something like that. But I don't want people to think that just because they seemed like a slower, tougher NFL style team from an old era, that they're somehow much worse than any modern team. So Coach Gene Stallings, just, you know, one of the greats. Jay Barker at quarterback. We talked about that national championship game, but he had a great season. Derek Lassick at running back. He's sort of a forgotten name, but he's a tough guy. Reminds me of some of the modern stable of Alabama running backs. This team actually reminds me a lot of the modern Alabama teams. Curtis Brown, David Palmer, great wide receiver, great punt returner also. He set them up with great field position in a lot of games. They also had a little-known young wide receiver who had four catches on the season. Do you guys know who this is?
I do.
Dabo Sweeney.
Dabo.
Dabo.
I think he was a freshman at the time. Four catches on the year. But the real story of this team is the defense. Antonio Langham and George Teague were the leaders. These guys were just awesome. And we'll talk about some of their accomplishments. Also, Chris Donnelly, Sam Shade, Damian Jeffries. This defense, again, an old era, they allowed 9.2 points per game in the regular season, pre-SEC championship and national championship. But 9.2 points a game. Can you imagine that? Even with someone like Alabama or Clemson now, 9.2 sounds crazy. So undefeated 13-0, 12th national championship in Bama history, 8th perfect season in Bama history, plus 18 turnover ratio in the regular season, which is just incredible. So 18 more takeaways than giveaways. And that's a big reason for their success. They were a hyper aggressive defense that were ball hawks and made tons of strips, tons of interceptions. And much like modern Alabama teams, they turned a lot of those takeaways into points. So instead of going through the whole season, I want to talk about three specific games that I think really define the season. The first one is October 17th. This is their first ranked opponent of the year, number 13, Tennessee. This is at Tennessee. Alabama wins the game 17-10. To let you know about this other era, so this was the College Game Day game of the week. This was the last season that College Game Day was in a studio, if you guys remember that, before they used to go on location.
Oh, yeah.
That started in 93, so this was one of the last games they did from in studio. The College Game Day lineup was a very young Chris Fowler, a, you know, not so young Lee Corso, but much younger than now. And the third guy, do you remember the third College Game Day person originally?
Craig James.
That's right.
Fuck Pony. Yeah.
So I was watching a clip of this, and Corso was really sharp, I got to say. Now, of course, he did pick Tennessee to win, so he still got that kind of like wrong pick thing going even back then, but... Yeah, you may be younger and you see Corso now and you're like, what is this crazy old man doing here? But he's a legend and he used to have really sharp analysis. So anyway, Tennessee was, they were in a transitional period here. They had coach Johnny Majors, who Dan will know, who won a national title with his hometown of Pittsburgh and then became the Tennessee coach. Before this game, they were saying "Fire Johnny Majors." It was the parallels to today were very similar. Some call him the Butch Jones of the 90s. This was one of the first games that was the beginning of the end of Majors. He wasn't fired right after this, but he was fired a few weeks later. And so interim coach Phil Fulmer comes in and goes 3-0 on the season. So this Alabama team basically started the Phil Fulmer era. So kudos to them. So then they roll through the SEC. They beat Ole Miss, LSU, highly ranked Mississippi State, Auburn in the Iron Bowl, 17-0. SEC championship game, December 5th against number 12 Florida, Steve Spurrier's third year, a Florida team that's much better than that 12 ranking. So this is interesting because this was the first ever SEC championship game in the first year they did divisions. And so the SEC network has actually made a show about this. And the name of it is "The Play That Changed College Football." So coaches, everybody was against the SEC championship game. They were against the divisions. Spurrier had some harsh words, which you could all look up on YouTube if you want. Nobody really wanted it to happen. Even fans thought that it was dumb. And the Alabama players who had to play in it were annoyed at the time because Miami, who was number one, gets this, you know, they're done with their season and they're going to be in the Sugar Bowl. And meanwhile, Alabama's number two. Now they have to play another game against a great Florida team. All that can happen is they lose and they're out of that national championship race. So they were not happy. It turned out to be an unbelievable game, much better than the national championship game. And it was capped off by an Antonio Langham pick six that won the game. Just an, you know, an unbelievably tense moment in the fourth quarter. He makes the pick. He runs it back. He's going crazy. The crowd's going crazy. And that play really turned around people's thoughts on the SEC championship game and the whole idea of divisions. People were like, holy shit, this new thing is pretty awesome. And so the SEC championship game, obviously still around. Other conferences have now every other conference has embraced the championship game. So this really like changed the course of college football history. So a very important game. And then the Sugar Bowl, January 1st, 93. Alabama wins 34-13 over number one Miami. This is Miami with Dennis Erickson, Gino Toretta, the defending national champs, a really fucking good team. And Alabama was an underdog in this. It reminds me of 09 Alabama beating Tim Tebow that we talked about a few weeks back, where they weren't supposed to win and they just came out and their defense was unbelievable. Lassick had 135 yards rushing, but it was the D. It was George Teague scored a touchdown on an interception return. And then if you want to see one play that summed up this team and one of the greatest plays in college football history, Miami throws a bomb. The receiver's running free and clear to the end zone, going to make it a tight game. George Teague runs from out of nowhere, chases the guy down, grabs him, pulls the ball behind the Miami receiver's back. So the Miami receiver's holding the ball behind his back. And then Teague just knocks him down and rips the ball away. And so Miami was, you know, a chance to get back in the game. And he literally ripped it away from them. And they went on to win 34-13, national title. This defense was super aggressive. And the last thing that struck me watching this was, they really let him play back then. Like I was watching some clips and guys would be three steps out of bounds and get drilled. And not only is there no call, but the players don't even whine. The guy who gets drilled just jumps back up and runs back to the huddle. It was a man's game back then.
SEC hard.
That's right. It was a different time. So Dan, you've got a tough task of picking a line and matching up two teams from completely different eras, completely different styles. What's the line on this game, and then how do you see it playing out?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, it's obviously a hard line. I don't know to come up with. Okay, first off, Florida. Ryan did an outstanding job breaking down Florida. Their offense was just really, really, really perfect for college football. So many options in terms of movement with the quarterback, with play action, with zone reads, with like play action pass, with play action option, triple option, Percy Harvin in motion. just a really complicated offense that they just executed, you know, easily. And it felt like they were always going to score. I mean, I think Ryan said they averaged like 43 points a game or something absurd like that. I mean, that's a lot for SEC football, especially for a team who actually ran the ball as much as they did. I mean, this isn't a, you know, a Florida State team from 99 or a Spurrier team that's thrown it all over the lot. I mean, this is straight, mostly power running. And, of course, they're, like, loaded a wide receiver and tight end and offensive line and just extremely well coached with Urban Meyer. And then, obviously, on defense, extremely loaded. Yada, yada. I'm not going to rehash what you guys both said. I'm here to come up with a line. The line for this game is Florida minus 8.5. And the reason it's that high, I think, is because although Alabama's defense is extremely strong, Florida's defense is extremely strong, and I don't see Alabama's offense scoring any more than, say, 14 points. So I'm going to say Florida gets the full respect, gets 8.5 of the total of 41.5. And I think Florida wins about 26-14.
All right. I like it. I like it. I think, Dan, I think you're right on. I was a little surprised you went as high as you did. I thought you'd keep this around 7 to tease it a little bit. But you're right. I mean, this Alabama defense, like Tom said, gave up a 9 and change a game. But this Florida defense only gave up 12.9 a game, less than 13, but while scoring 43.6. So like you said, watching and reading the recaps of that 92 Alabama game season, those games that they did have that were tough, you know, some of those closer, low-scoring games, they won on, you know, running. The one game that they got shut down was at Ole Miss, Tom. Ole Miss held them to, like, 30 rushing yards for the whole game, and Barker had threw for, like, 280, which was a career high. Like,
sure, yeah, and their stats just aren't – again, I don't think you can judge this by the stats. It's going
no,
to like,
but what I'm saying,
against
but what
any
I'm,
modern team.
No, but what I'm saying is that the when they did get shut down in a run game, when Ole Miss proved that they could shut down their run, they had to go to the pass, and they did. Mm-hmm. There's no chance they could go to the pass against Janoris Jenkins and Joe Hayden and those that secondary in their prime. There's just no chance. And like we said, you know, both teams love to run the ball. I think the biggest difference is the fact that, like I said, Florida had two legitimate Olympic track athletes in their backfield, and that's not even counting Percy Harvin, who maybe was faster than all of them with the ball in his hands.
He was.
So for that reason, I'm going to go a little bit more than Dan, but not by much. I'm going to go with 31-13 final.
Oh, wow. Florida. So a blowout.
I think so.
It's our first blowout, Tom.
All right, so my vote doesn't count, but let me then, in that case, put in the good word for 92 Alabama. First off, they scored defensive scores in tons of games, so I don't think you can just say their offense would score 14. How about that defense putting up 14 against Tebow? You know, I was all set to just pick Florida in a blowout. My personal feeling is that, you know, no old school team from that era can compete with any great team from the modern era, but you kind of have to bend time and space to, you know, make these matchups even. But watching clips of Alabama's defense and how aggressive they were and how they set up with field position and, you know, scores and their punt returns were great. They won a game of like field position and time of possession and the way teams used to win. So I think the style of play would prevent Tim Tebow and Florida from scoring a ton of points and blowing them out because they just wouldn't have the time and, it's just a killer defense. But as you said, Florida's defense was also great and would probably find a way to shut down Alabama. So I'm thinking a low scoring game, and I was thinking more of a 21-17 type win for Tim Tebow.
Respect.
All right. So Tebow moves on. We have one matchup left. It's the one I am actually the most excited about because I think it's the one that's going to get the most heated. We have the 2001 Miami Hurricanes against Cam Newton's Auburn Tigers. So basically Cam Newton. So it's Cam versus the entire 01 Miami team.
And it's barely close.
And people are going to make cases for Miami like it's a no-brainer, and I'm going to make a case for Cam beating that entire team by himself because he was that fucking good.
He was okay. So good. The rest of that team wasn't any good at all. The rest of the Auburn team was, like, average at best, and he was just, like,
I don't know, but they had Nick, like, Fairley. They had a couple other good guys on defense. They had Dyer, who was the Zach Mills of running backs.
Guys were all stiffs, every single one of them.
So Cam versus the entire U.
Stiff, all the wide receivers stiffs. Coach was a stiff, all of them, except for Cam.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next week.
We'll talk about Gene Chiggins' chicken shack. Come back next week.
He's another one. So there you go.
All right. So that's the last. That's the 4 versus 13. It's the last one of the first round. And then we move on to the second round where it's going to get real tough.
I'm looking forward to it.
Super fun.
Who has a parting shot before we go?
I got one quick one. It's Columbus Day, where we take off work for Christopher Columbus. He sailed the ocean blue with the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. 500 years before that, a man named Leif Erikson made his appearance in Newfoundland and came down the St. Lawrence River and looked at Lake Ontario and said, "This is even worse than Norway. It's cold and it's snowing sideways. I don't know why anybody would live here." Fast forward 1,100 years, me and Ryan made the same decision, except we didn't go back to Norway. We went to Arizona. So that's all I really got about that. It's really cold in upstate New York, and Leif Erikson knew that 500 years before Christopher Columbus. And that's all I got to say about that.
Doesn't Leif Erikson have an Interpol song named after him?
That was the second point. The second point, underrated song off of Turn On the Bright Lights.
Chris Columbus have any songs?
No, and people like really aren't a fan of him. Leif Erikson's a really cool name too. Just it flows well. It sounds very modern.
It sounds like a Brooklyn hipster, Leif Erikson.
Yeah, Leif Erikson. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Leif Erikson application at the local coffee shop.
Exactly.
You have a master's in English. Yep, you're hired at minimum wage. We'll bring you right in.
This is my son, Leif Erikson. He goes to yoga class with me.
Oh, it's very modern. I don't understand, but I just thought it was funny that he actually made it as far as where like St. Lawrence River meets Lake Ontario. Like that was like the last found like archaeological finding or whatever. And like
to our hometown, basically.
Yeah, he's like, that's probably another ocean. It's frozen. Nah. Back to Norway. He got to Syracuse,
and he's like, you know, maybe if they had some good chicken tenders or wings around here, I'd stay for a little bit, but I don't see anything else going on around here.
Well, no, if he'd stuck around a little longer, maybe a lax game would have broken out, and he would have hung around a little longer.
We're seriously about this close from, like, the first, like, international lacrosse game going down 1,100 years ago. And he probably was like, yes, I'm not seeing any elk. I have to go back. There's only deer here. I have to leave. But, yeah, interesting. Want to point that out there.
All right. Shout out to Leif Erikson.
Shout out to Leif.
Okay. Ryan, anything else to add, or shall we go?
No, nothing really to add. Oh, one thing to add. Yes. Personal life goal is being met this year. I'm going to go with Dan and some other friends. And for the first time, I'm going to get to see Morrissey live in person. And that's just, I know this is a sports podcast and all that, but God damn, I'm excited to get to see Morrissey in person for the first time. So shout out to me.
Where are you seeing him?
At the Marquee Theater in Phoenix, which is a 2,500 person venue, general admission only, no seats. It's like the Lost Horizon, but a little bigger.
God.
It's great. I've seen some great bands there.
Hopefully it's much better than the Lost Horizon.
This is who I've seen at the Marquee. Band of Horses. Animal Collective. Churches. And now the Moz. Am I missing somebody? I'm missing one, am
no,
I?
No. But for comparison, here is who we've seen at the Lost Horizon. Kid Rock.
P.O.D.
Buck Cherry. P.O.D.
Eve 6.
Eve 6. Fuel.
Kid Rock.
That's right.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Kid Rock, $6.
Oh, I saw way more than that because I went to college literally one block from that venue. So I got to see all the bullshit, like OAR and all that crap. And yeah, it was pretty bad.
It was more expensive for me and Tom to actually eat at Burger King before the Kid Rock show than it was to buy two tickets for the Kid Rock show. It just tells you.
That's wow. Right. We saw future U.S. Senator Kid Rock for $6.
In 1998.
98.
Yep.
All right, folks.
In 2000, we saw, my friends and I saw the Insane Clown Posse buying 40s before their show at the Lost Horizon when we were freshmen in college, also going down there to buy 40s. And the Insane Clown Posse in full makeup were at the same gas station buying the same 40s as us.
Can you believe Senator Kid Rock and Supreme Court Justice Violent J both came to the same place?
Oh, boy. All right.
All right. We're never going to top stuff. Kid Rock and Insane Clown Posse stories, so we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week talking about Cam Newton. We'll see you then.
Three, two.
3-2.
You sure that's not the Blackhawks Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, you got that confused with like the Yankees score.
The Yankees have 7. They have way more. They're outscoring half the NFL.
So the Yankees right now are outscoring the Bears and the Vikings combined.
Sam Trafford sacked by Leonard Floyd for 5 yards loss for safety. It's real.
NFL, it's fantastic.